You're funny, Cheryl. I had to laugh when you called me and asked if I would do this and maybe figured I was upset with you. I thought that was so funny. That never would even cross my mind to be upset over something like that. Yeah, no problem. I feel like it's a blessing to be able to rest with self again, literally, in sitting down, relaxing, joining with, sharing. What could be better than that? So we are reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul, which is a Michael Langford book, for those of you who don't normally tune in at this time of day. And it's a book of powerful quotes by seven different Christian mystics, as Michael Langford speaks of them. W. Norman Cooper, Catherine Piedrick, Joel S. Goldsmith, Eva Bell Werber, William Samuel, Elise Morgan, and Ruby Nelson. And we just started rereading, I just started rereading this book last week. I've read it once through already in the sanctuary, and now we are recording it. And so we are in chapter one, which is William Samuel. And the following quotes by William Samuel are from the book A Guide to Awareness and Tranquility. And Michael Langford was wonderful enough to take from all of these Christian mystics and their books and pull out the direct path quotes and put them into this book that I am now reading. Here in the room, Experience Your Perfect Soul. So we are in chapter one, William Samuel, on page 12. So here we go. Again, like I say, thank you for allowing me to rest, because here it is again, right away, talking about resting. To rest in the infinite self-knowledge of being. Knowing I am forever beholding, knowing, comprehending, and apprehending the divine self who is being this consciousness, is to live the identity I am. And that whole last sentence is italicized. Is to live the identity I am. And I have to laugh because right now, as I reread this paragraph again for, I don't know, the second or third time today, it reminds me a bit of how I experienced the reading I did for Reverend Gloria this morning called The Fabric of Self. And that was a Rupert Spira sharing. And I had that same sort of sense when I was asked to read that and took that into contemplation and went over it three or four times. And that's how this first paragraph feels the same way to me, talking about this consciousness, which is exactly the same thing that Reverend Gloria shared about this morning, this idea of or condition of unmanifest consciousness, and then the consciousness that is focused on objects, objective consciousness. And so looking at those things and using those words like amness and isness and consciousness and oneness, and this is talking about infinite self-knowledge of being and the apprehending the divine self, beholding, forever beholding the divine self, knowing the divine self, comprehending the divine self. Who is being this consciousness is to live the identity I am. And I think it's interesting too that the word identity is also used here, as Reverend Gloria spoke to that false identification, where that identification actually thinks that consciousness exists within it, as opposed to consciousness being all that is, pregnant with all that is, having, I'll use the term birthed again, birthed of wholeness. There's nothing ever left out. That identity, that I am. So again, to rest in the infinite self-knowledge of being, knowing I am forever beholding, knowing, comprehending, and apprehending the divine self, who is being this consciousness, is to live the identity I am. This is to be, if anybody's interested or feels they'd like to contribute something right now, I'm just curious about the word apprehending, and if someone can look that up in the dictionary and just give me a definition. I'm just curious more as to how that's applied. And sometimes for me, looking things up in the dictionary, words that I think I know what they are, or I already know, the already know mind. I find that there are oftentimes definitions that are so perfectly applicable and helpful in expanding my understanding of this in a beautiful way, not in so much this intellectual clinging way, but just in like a contemplative sort of way. So if somebody wants to look up the term apprehend, that would be great, and type it into the room. I'd appreciate it. So, living the identity I am, this who is this divine self who is being this consciousness, this is to be continually self-aware. Capital S, self-aware, self-hyphen aware. This is to be continually self-aware. This living the identity I am is to be continually self-aware. And I noted that word continually this morning, and I am noticing it again right now, continually. It's not speaking of any kind of partial dedication or, when I feel like it. Or deciding that something else is more worthy of my time than this continuous and consistent focus on self-awareness. That some sort of distraction or external distraction, that's the best word. Distraction grabs my attention, seemingly grabs my attention, and draws me away from being continually self-aware. But this started off by saying to rest is to live that identity. That's where the rest is. I mean, why would I not want to be continually self-aware if, in fact, in truth, that is rest? That is, the experience of, I'm going to say rest, as I understand rest. And it feels the word rest for me implies more of just relaxing, calm, curious. Open. Observing. To rest. Yeah, to rest. That's the rest. To be continually self-aware. All have discovered that from the moment we act, and act is emphasized, from the moment we act on the decision to discover reality, we begin to find it. The moment we sincerely begin a determination of the absolute, it continues of its own accord until reality is disclosed. And I'm recalling Reverend Gloria speaking this morning again about that deconstruction of the identity that has been constructed from the get-go, that all learning language from the get-go points outward, outward. Points to adding on, layering. Rupert Spira's reading from Reverend Gloria this morning. Let's see, I've got it right here next to me. I can find that real quickly. Talked about layers. Yeah. The belief and feeling I am the body is continually substantiated. It becomes dense, solid, sticky, layered. So, all have discovered that from the moment we act on the decision to discover reality, we begin to find it. The moment we sincerely begin a determination of the absolute, it continues of its own accord until reality is disclosed. And Reverend Gloria was talking about that stickiness. How is it that I can unstick myself from the stickiness I've made? How is it possible that the ego could unwind itself and somehow feeling like maybe that was her responsibility? How does that work? Not really, maybe understanding the mechanics of how that works. And this is, to me, saying reality, the absolute, discloses itself of its own accord. The moment we sincerely begin a determination of the absolute, or we want to connect with the truth of self, with reality as truth, with the divine self, with the identity I am, the absolute of its own accord does the rest. We just have the intense desire for liberation. We take the time to be still and quiet. Allowing reality to be disclosed. So the acted upon decision to determine fact from fiction is somewhat like pushing a canoe into a river where it is quickly caught up in the silent and effortless flow to a happy and infinite awakening. I love the word, I love the effortless flow idea just so very much, even in practical terms, operating in the world. To notice when the flow is going on. I mean, in traffic, for instance, that's one place where one day last week, I have an all-electric car. And so there is a point to being mindful about mileage. It gets 80 miles. On a charge. And so I was helping my daughter and son-in-law with some moving, and they are now about 32 miles south of where I presently live. And so driving on the expressway also is more draining on the battery at higher speeds than if you were simply using the electric car for the putzing around in town where it is very efficient. And there was this effortless flow on the way home, even though as Miss Reverend Rebecca Gibson spoke to this morning, LA traffic can be something else, or traffic in general in Southern California, at least, can be something else. We were in the flow because we were restricting how fast we decided to go on the expressway, which would be less fast than, than normal. And so because we were conserving, we were in a flow. We were at a different pace than most of the other people and found ourselves in these gaps where we would often remark to my husband and I with each other, "We're in the flow, baby." We're in the flow, almost like you had the whole expressway to yourself in this huge metropolis that we call, the greater Los Angeles area. It's often wonderful to experience in a visceral way, in a visual way, in a human sort of a way, being in the flow. Or even in city traffic where you're catching, there may be a traffic light every mile, and you find that you are in the flow where you're just catching every green light and everything is working beautifully. And that's a wonderful thing when that happens. I like the way this is worded. It feels like poetry to me in its own way. So it's talking about that acted upon decision where we are determined to know this self, to be continually self-aware, to know the absolute by being silent and going inward and look, taking my attention off of anything objective and going within, away from thought, away from objects, away from circumstances, away from people, away from all of that, and going within, where reality is then disclosed in the silence. So that acted upon decision to determine fact from fiction is somewhat like pushing a canoe into a river where it is quickly caught up in the silent and effortless flow to a happy and infinite awakening. And I had just caught the end of the previous sharing in the sanctuary where the idea of happiness was being shared. And this later on in this particular piece I'm reading, it talks about the idea of happiness. So we'll get to that in a minute. So it is like putting seed into fertile ground. And Reverend Gloria also spoke to that idea of the seeds that we plant and how we tend to them, whether we water them and nurture them, and what kind of soil do they land on or do we plant them in? Do we tend to the plant or do we leave it on its own to, you know, make it on your own? Do we give it love? Do we prune it when it needs to have dead wood? Do we fertilize it? All those things. Those are all ways to look at what passes through the mind as thought and which we understand to keep and nurture and share, and which we simply let go. The seed that's put into fertile ground produces beautiful flowers, wonderful vegetables, great results. And we can prove that to ourselves. Where do we plant our seed? What is my experience? So someone asks a question, it's in quotes. Mr. Samuel, be specific. Exactly what action is required? Church activity? Prayer? Healing, self-immolation, and self-immolation is an act of killing oneself as a sacrifice, especially by burning. That one I had looked up at some point in time, at the last reading, I believe. So this person is asking, you know, what kind of action is required? And here is the answer. Our first action is the effortless turning within, and that's italicized, turning within to the self, to listen to the heart. This is it. This is all. This is all. Again, our first action is the effortless turning within to the self to listen to the heart. This is it. This is all. And in Michael Langford's The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, I believe it could be the first it might be the first chapter, I'm not sure. I really shouldn't say that because I'm not sure, but the idea was that when we're practicing awareness, watching, awareness, meditation, sometimes the question arises like, you know, is that all there is? Or is that it? That instruction, for instance, to turn away from thought, turn away from thought. And turn your attention towards awareness, or be conscious of consciousness, consciousness, conscious of consciousness. And those kinds of ideas, which were somewhat shared as well in the Rupert Spira reading that Reverend Gloria spoke to, using terms like consciousness and being and oneness and amness and isness and, you know, other and unmanifest consciousness and consciousness, those types of words that, at least in my experience, still feel like I don't really know what that is. There doesn't seem to be this this comprehending and apprehending the divine self in fullness of experience. That, and so the ego says, you know, is that when we're told to turn within to that self, listening to that quiet heart, the ego wants to step in and say, that's it. There's nothing else. There's no object to look at, or sound to hear, or picture to see, or thing to amuse me, or, you know, something to distract me is what it really amounts to. And here it is telling us, turning within to the self and listening to the heart, this is it. This is the all of it. This is all. There's nothing else. And the tendency of an ego preservation strategy is to add something to that. That's what this, you know, construct that we spoke about this morning. I am something. I'm no longer just I am. I am something. And then I am something other. So we just keep adding, and that other that we speak of here, that other is a zillion different things. It can be splintered into a zillion more things. All in an attempt to construct an identity that is false. And all we're being asked as our first action to turn away from that, to deconstruct that, as Reverend Gloria spoke about this morning. And we're told that it's effortless, this turning within to the self and listening to the heart. I mean, isn't that what we would hope? That it would be effortless? And we're told this is all we have to do. This is it. This is all. Yeah, for sure. Effortless. I don't really want to work at it in that sense. Turn it into some sort of intellectual deconstructing. That's not, there's nothing going on there. That's, as Reverend Gloria spoke to, constructing another construct. Yes. Yes. You got it. So here is the unadorned truth. And that makes me think of the title of my what I decided to call this sharing with you guys from Michael Langford's Experience Your Perfect Soul. This unadorned truth, I would also call no fluff. I just like that like that term, no fluff. So here is the unadorned truth. Stripped of the ego's covering of abstruseness. And that ego covering is abstruseness means hard to understand. So the ego covers up everything with confusion. The laws of chaos, they're called in A Course in Miracles. It covers everything over with complexity. So again, here is the unadorned truth, stripped of the ego's covering of abstruseness and intellectualism. Truth is simple. Simple is emphasized. Truth is simple. It is always simple, and the always is emphasized. So one way we can certainly check our premises, maybe even in the course of a day, is if we find ourselves trying to figure something out and feeling confused or upset about something or feeling like the world is a complicated place or piling on with an opinion that adds to the confusion or thinking that I know something and I need to express that knowing in order to, I don't know, validate this construct I believe myself to be, get involved in stories that are complicated, give my opinion on how I think it should, how to resolve it. That is madness. That's complication. That's chaos. This is saying truth is simple. It's always simple. So maybe I don't notice some frantic chatter going on because there's such involvement there that it's like a runaway train. But I can catch it again by how do I feel? How do I feel? Do I feel anxious? Is my jaw clenched? Are my shoulders tense? Do I, you know, have a neck ache? Are my, you know, we feel it in the body as well. That doesn't necessarily feel uncomplicated and simple. So I can take simple clues, be vigilant, as Reverend Karen Wirth spoke this morning in her meditation on our lesson for today. Light and joy and peace abide in me, and I am as God created me. Shining the spotlight, the flashlight of truth, onto those thoughts that turn away from simplicity to complexity. And then we experience something uncomfortable. So we have, you know, a couple of opportunities to turn away from thought and back towards awareness, where it's simple. Truth is simple. It's always simple. The truth is easy and uncomplicated. It is tender and effortlessly available. And one of my consistent aspiration steps is to ask in all things, keeping in mind that I don't know. And so it definitely seems more complicated when I think I know something. And one of the things I hope to be more consistent about is asking in all things, remembering that more and more and more. Ask in all things. To know that the truth is easy and uncomplicated and available, and that it's tender. It's tender. I love that word. Tender is such a sweet, loving, nurturing sort of a word. It somehow for me brings up that a breastfeeding mother with, you know, I have a picture in my mind of my own child looking into my eyes while breastfeeding, and just that tender connection is so, there's just something so, so beautiful about that. And that's that feeling I get with what this is saying about the truth. And to know that that's effortlessly available. I mean, what a gift. It says its location is not limited to the great libraries, nor to universities, temples, and cathedrals. Truth and the honest statements about it. Honest is italicized. The honest statements about truth are simplicity itself. And that statement is so honest statements about truth. It brings to mind how often I say, as well as I hear other people say, it's the truth. And we, small self, ego preservation strategy self, ego identity self, has a truth, a quote, truth that it may hold on to in some way, shape, or form. It may be true for you, but it's not true for the other guy, and they'll tell you so. So that is not an honest truth. The truth, at least that I'm understanding this to be speaking about, is absolute, pure, unadorned, before words, truth. One truth. Shared. And nothing else. Not my truth. And your truth, which, you know, can be different truths. There's nothing honest about that at all. Those are the ways that we lie to ourselves every single day. So this again is saying truth and the honest statements about it are simplicity itself. It is found within the heart, within the self, here and now. For years, we have gone outside to teachers, leaders, and holy books, when the entire universe of truth has been within us all the while. Its confirmation is found nowhere else. Where? Within the heart. here, now. And there's exclamation points behind all three of those. After the question, you know, where is this this self that we've looked for outside of ourselves, in conferences and teachers and leaders and books and audios and, you know, all the ways that we've sought externally to find this self that can only be found within. And nothing, I'm not in any way slamming any of those other things. I still engage in all of that and love it. Love what is and love the absence of it as well. I love what is. But carrying within this, you know, seemingly human body is this idea of self that has never been separated from the mind of God. Ever. And where is that? Within the heart, here, now, right now. So this next piece is called Reality is Easily Comprehended, and I'm going to take a nice sip of some sun tea that I made. Oh, nice. So reality is easily comprehended. And I'm on page 14, Experience Your Perfect Soul. Inevitably, intellectual mankind complicates everything and makes a mystery of truth. Makes a mystery of truth. Can you imagine how confused we are that we've made a mystery of the very essence, the very truth, the very identity of who we are? We've made a mystery of that so that now it seems we are deconstructing from this human being and trying to, I'm going to say, it's not about rejecting the human being or not rejecting the human being. It's about allowing that to be used as the vessel through which truth or reality can reveal, as we read a page or so ago, discover what reality is in truth. It's given as a gift. But intellectual mankind wants to complicate that and make it, as we said, sticky, layered, complicated. And he says, inevitably, intellectual mankind complicates everything and makes a mystery of truth. In intellectual circles, the idea is prevalent that reality is relative at best. You know, as opposed to being absolute reality. It's if I can perceive or seemingly intellectually understand or read the words on this page or have any notion in the mind that I am a person talking about reality, that's kind of what's known as relative reality, or at least that's how I understand it. And absolute reality would be what I'm going to call like the total unknown in my present state of mindfulness. I hope I said that. I hope that's understandable. But at any rate, this is saying In intellectual circles, the idea is prevalent that reality is relative at best and can never really be known. That all we can do is get closer to it. And that, say the ministers, philosophers, theologians, and educators, takes years of study, prayer, self-immolation, self-denial, suffering, toil, and perhaps a death or two thrown in for good measure. Malarkey. I mean, it's, you know, I love the way that that little last piece was thrown in, and perhaps a death or two thrown in for good measure, because certainly death seems to be, you know, the absolute in suffering. Death, yeah, the end of the ego. And he's saying, in order to, experience reality as all there is, it's really not about these things, the years of study, unending prayer, you know, burning yourself alive, self-denial, suffering, toil. I mean, who is the I? Who is the I that does these things? Who is the I that still believes in this death? That these things have to take place before I am to know myself. This reality that is all that is. This consciousness that is as it is, complete and whole, without suffering, without toil, yet conscious of toil, and conscious of the absence of toil, conscious of suffering, and conscious of the absence of suffering. Simply conscious. So he says, reality is real, not relative. And it can be discovered without labor. Instead of effort, it is the tenderest labor of love. It is happiness beyond belief. It is reward that hasn't even been dreamt of. And that is such a beautiful invitation, letting us know reality's real. It's not relative. It's the relative that's unreal. Let go of the belief that the relative is real. It is the illusion. And it says it can be discovered without labor. We're not laboring under some sort of burden or weight. Instead of effort, it says, it's the tenderest labor of love. There's this just desire to sit and be still. There's this desire to live my aspiration on a daily basis, to take it into contemplation, to ask, to be that empty vessel, to acknowledge, I do not know. I put that thinking mind aside and turn my attention to you. meaning myself. That's the tenderest labor of love. And then it says it's happiness beyond belief. We certainly have a ton of beliefs about what happiness is. And this is saying it's a happiness beyond belief. It's not of a construct of belief. It's not comprised of anything that is presently understood intellectually. It's a happiness before. I guess I can call it maybe unmanifest happiness without form. And also, happiness in form, happiness of form and the absence of form. And then it's the reward that hasn't even been dreamt of. I love that. For proof, and strangely enough, I am one of those people who has asked for proof before. And sometimes I've likened my persona to the Doubting Thomas. Regina had talked about resisting, doubting, and abiding in self. And I used to listen often to a CD in my car, and I believe it was Ramana Maharshi. And it talked about the resistor and the doubter and abiding in self. And I have often noted doubt within my mind. And so this paragraph starts off by saying, for proof of this reality being real and being able to be discovered without labor and to have it be experienced as the tenderest labor of love, and to, I'm just going to say, have the a happiness and a reward that are beyond any present experience I've ever can even dream of. For proof of that, the first action is simply quietly to turn within one's self. There to listen to the heart, where truth is and where the answers are. And that's it. That's it. So if you're looking for proof, here's the first action, and it's a simple action. And it's simply asking quietly to turn within to one's self, there to listen to the heart, where truth is and where the answers are. Pretty simple. There's nothing complicated about that. We can't say, there's a lot of add-ons there that I just don't get it. But we may note that there's an unwillingness to do that. And we can change our mind. We can change our mind. So it says, the answer is here. And that here is italicized. That's the name of this little short section I'm about to read, with the word here being italicized like three times in a row. And it says, one's own heart is here. Consequently, the truth is here. It is comforting to desist from the rat race for a moment and acknowledge that truth is at hand, and the at hand is italicized. It's now, the at hand is now. It says it's comforting to quit, you know, to desist, to stop. Chill out for a minute from the rat race. Even if you can only take the 3 to 5 seconds that Bentinho speaks of. If you can't devote the first 5 minutes to the top of every hour to resting in God, saying to yourself, light and peace, love and light and peace abide in me. I am as God created me. Take the 3 to 5 seconds. It's comforting to desist from the rat race for a moment and acknowledge that truth is at hand. Truth is the solution to all that seems untrue, hence unreal. How wonderful to realize, no matter what the apparent problem, that one is never any farther from the happiness, peace, and tranquility he may think he needs than himself. Himself is right here, this very now, closer than breathing. Closer than breathing. The self that we are, the one self that we share. And if you think about breathing, it's not like your attention is specifically focused on inhale, exhale, so that this body can breathe. It happens of itself, yet it's happening of itself by a power greater than I'm recognizing in each now moment. That breath is intimate to seeming life. And it's saying that myself, herself, himself, this very now is even closer than that breath. Right here, right now. So next week we will read Happiness is Here. I am stopping at this point in time. I am on page 15. I will be starting there next week with Experience Your Perfect Soul. Thank you for joining with me, and I will give up the mic, letting go. Thank you.